good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm feeling really Scottish, even though I'm not Scottish.
Why is that?
Because we have taken a flight. We've gone to Edinburgh.
We're in Edinburgh. Amazing. And we're here with Bombay Sapphire, who are sponsoring us to come up here and find out what makes people excited and stimulated by culture and creativity.
And also, we actually met each other probably 11 years ago or something here in the National Galleries of Scotland.
Yes.
In Edinburgh.
Yes.
And we thought it would be a really fun thing to come back here together.
Yeah, and we met at a Tracy Emin retrospective. So we're working our way around Edinburgh today, talking to very exciting, creative people that are at the epicentre of the art world up here, and especially during the Edinburgh Arts Festival. So right now, we have come to an area called Jupiterland. Tell us about Jupiterland, Rob.
Well, Jupiter Artland is an incredible, huge kind of landscaped area, and it has sculptures, so it's a kind of sculpture park, I guess you'd describe it as. And there's even a land art kind of work here that is so iconic, and I really want to get a picture taken there. And one of the reasons we wanted to come to Edinburgh as well was because during the Fringe, a lot of our friends are actually doing performances here, like Table Manners and The Guilty Feminist and London Hughes. And it's just an amazing time to be here. But what we wanted to do was highlight spaces that you might not immediately think to go to. Because often if you get off the train in Edinburgh in the town centre, you might go to the National Galleries of Scotland.
Or go and see some stand-up, but you're not aware that there's an arts festival happening as well around that whole experience.
Exactly, and there are so many incredible places here. Now, Jupiter Artland, where we are right now, I came to twice before because there was a curator called John Heffernan who used to curate here, and I came up a few times, and it's really stayed with me, and there was an amazing Anya Galaccio installation, which I think is permanent, and I loved that work so much. And then the land art by
Andy Goldsworthy
also really stuck with me. So it's the kind of place you can visit, and you walk around the estate and you can see art in a really different context.
Would it be described as a hidden gem, Rob?
I think it is a hidden gem. And actually, it's a bit like if you're a Londoner and you've been to Kew or something like that, you have that kind of intense nature and all the flowers, and there's even a bumblebee right now, like crawling under, actually on my foot.
Oh my gosh,
I've got to get a picture of that. That is too beautiful. Right. But I love bumblebees. But
healthy bumblebee, to be honest.
No, but he's okay. I love him.
Be flying, shouldn't
so it? Basically, it has nature, you know, combined with art, and I think that's just such a unique thing.
Archer,
and they also do an amazing residency here. And Samara Scott was here years ago,
Love Samara.
I came to see her do an incredible installation here. So I have this kind of personal experience here.
So we've come here anyway to meet the head of exhibitions, who is going to have a chat with us now about this. And we would love to welcome to Talk Art
Claire Feely.
Thank you for having me.
That's okay. How are you doing, Claire?
I'm good. I've managed to climb down from that tree.
Yes. So you thought we were doing a phone interview, but it's actually a face-to-face.
I know. I thought I could get away with it.
You doing up a tree?
So for this Edinburgh Art Festival, we're working with Tricia Brown Dance Company. We're showing a gallery exhibition of Tricia Brown's film archive.
Is she still alive?
She passed away 2 years ago. Oh. So one of the last times she herself performed in Scotland was in Edinburgh. So it felt really important that her first UK solo show was in Scotland and in Edinburgh.
Where in Edinburgh was she performing before?
She performed in the International. So it was one of her last fully stage choreographies. And Edinburgh has supported her throughout her
career.
Entire career. Yeah.
But like from the 60s and 70s, because she changed the face of choreography, didn't she, in the New York dance scene. And she came to like prominence in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
So was Edinburgh on top of her then?
Even then,
Yeah.
One of the first people outside of the US to see how important her work is. But not only do we want to show an exhibition of her film archive, which is the first in the UK, it was really important that we bring her entire company over here.
Wow.
The company is still keeping her work alive. Dance, it lives in the body. If it's not being kept alive through performance, that incredible legacy will disappear. Edinburgh.
So how many members of the troupe are here?
There's 15 members of the company. So we've been meeting both in New York and in Edinburgh over the last 2 years to put this combined show together, exhibition and the live program. With Tricia Brown, those that you picked up on, you know, one of the ways that she challenged the face of contemporary dance was taking it outside of these traditional formal theatre settings. Yeah. And she was using downtown New York as her theatre space. Right. So city streets, parklands, any space that she could find, she made it a site of performance.
Wow.
Right, so there were site-specific works and they would just appear.
Appear, yeah. Wow. Yeah. So
you're doing that, you're recreating that here in the environment of Jupiterland.
We're recreating it here, and that's the only way to describe it, because it's not like staging something in a black box.
In the theater, yeah.
It has to be in relationship with what's around. I mean, it's a duet with you know, the trees, with the gardens, with the woodlands, and the dancers have to kind of deal with that in real time, yeah, and be very, very responsive. That's why we were scampering around in the woodlands earlier.
In the trees.
And right. I saw some amazing photographs from before. I don't think they were here necessarily, but of dancers kind of floating on platforms in a kind of pond or something, or a lake.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And you can see their bodies moving in relation to the trees and the nature around them. And it's just the most surreal but incredibly beautiful work, isn't it? So is that the kind of thing you're going to be doing here?
Yeah. So one of our most iconic works is by Charles Jenks, and it's this series of 18 man-made mountains and a cluster of four lakes. So on those four lakes will be four dancers. They're performing a piece intended to be in complete synchronization.
With each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Tricia Brown, she's very influenced by John Cage, ideas of chance, and she wants nature to interrupt the intention of the piece. So as the work unfolds, you know, nature takes over, the dancers, the rafts drift apart, and the dynamic, the tension of the piece is seeing the will of the dancers to stay in synchronicity and the pull of nature to kind of swirl them apart.
So it's like a team building exercise.
A little bit, yeah.
That's incredible. How long have you been here, Claire?
A year and a half. So yeah, since your buddy John left, I stepped into his shoes.
Awesome. And can you, for people who haven't been here before, can you quickly explain? So for example, like we were driving in today and we saw the incredible Phila de Barlow sculpture, which is amongst loads of trees in a kind of woodland. So you have all these kind of hidden artworks throughout the site that
and
people can
yeah.
walk around. So can you explain some of the artists that you have here?
So Jupiter Artland, we're 11 years old this year. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much, showing our age. But it starts from a very simple premise. Each year, an artist is invited to create their best work. So they're given carte blanche. They can choose a site in Jupiter Artland, and they are free to develop something ambitious, something that takes risks. So each year a new work joins the collection, sometimes more. So at the moment we have 35 permanent, very large scale works.
Yeah.
So Anya Galazio created a crystal cavern called The Light Pours Out of Me, that's made out of hundreds of thousands of amethyst crystals and obsidian rocks.
Wow.
Yeah. Phila de Barlow, who represented the UK at Venice a couple of years ago, she created her first ever permanent artwork, and it's this towering trio of sculptures that in some ways mimic like the height and kind of awe of trees. We've Andy Goldsworthy. He was in residency with us for a number of years and has created three works across the landscape. And Tricia Brown.
Did you drive through them on the way here? Would that have been a journey?
Yeah. So you go through... As you come down the drive, yeah. Andy Goldsworthy, the entire dense woodland there. Yeah. There's a work called Stone Coppice with these suspended boulders in the trees.
Oh, no, we didn't see them.
Oh, yeah. And then you turn a corner and Charles Jenks, those huge spiraling.
So that's Charles Jenks.
Charles
Jenks. Teletubbies.
Yes.
Like the,
yeah.
And actually, I've just remembered, I learned about Charles Jenks from Martha Lane Fox. Because she's either friends with him or family or something like that. And I remember I came here and posted a picture and she told me all about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They are so beautiful. We have to get a picture with that work.
We've got a picture of the bumblebee and...
I also really like this idea of Phyllida Barlow's being permanent. Because for her, that would have been quite a new idea. Because a lot of her work was recycled for so many years or even thrown away or, you know, destroyed and then put back into new work. So this idea of having something that lasts forever almost is such a wonderful thing for her.
It was a huge departure for her.
Yeah.
And... Nikki Wilson, so Nikki and Robert Wilson founded Jupiter Artland. Nikki is an artist herself and trained under Phyllida Barlow.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Phyllida and Nikki have a very close relationship.
That was at Slade, wasn't it? Did she teach at Slade?
Yeah, she did, yeah. She taught
Slade and Camberwell, so I don't think Phyllida would have made a permanent work at another site if there wasn't that trust she could do realize exactly the vision that she wanted. She was also utterly terrified at the prospect of foundations, but we're good at the civil engineering here.
That's not, they haven't got to worry about that.
talking about permanent commissions, you've also just done a brand new swimming pool that Russ and I just got to see. So that's by an artist called Joanna
Vasconcelos. Yeah. So that opened only a week ago. So that opened for Edinburgh Art Festival.
It's incredibly beautiful though. It's like the most amazing thing.
And you offer up swimming costumes, you told us as well.
Indeed. Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Designed by the artist.
Designed by the artist. Yep.
Love that. Swimming costumes designed by the artist.
Are they available in the gift shop?
They're available at the gift shop.
Are they really? That's so cool.
They surely must be. Come on.
No, they're super beautiful.
No, and I've got a question to ask about where the permanent artist. So you said that they get given locations. Do you tell them where they can make a work of art within the grounds of Jupiter Artland, or can they walk around and do like a research trip and go, I want to be there?
They walk around, they choose.
Oh, wow.
And it's often over years. So our permanent commissions, there's no constraint of time. It, you know, the work develops at its own pace. So Phyllida Barlow, that was a number of years in development. Joanna Vasconcelos's pool, that's 4 to 5 years in the making.
Wow.
And with Joanna's pool, like you've seen, we've just walked through it. It bursts with color.
Oh, yeah.
It's developed.
And it's heated.
And it's a balmy 30 degrees, but it's developed with future generations in mind. So we used a technique to produce the tiles that was developed like hundreds of years ago in Southern Europe. And it means that color, it takes a phenomenal length of time to do it, but it means the color lasts for hundreds of years.
Wow.
And very similar to, you know, like we work in a team here that's very connected with our curatorial team and our gardening team. So every time we think about like where a tree is positioned, we're thinking about what that will look in 100 years' time.
That's so nice.
The same way we think about an artwork, how that's going to have its own lifespan.
Yeah.
And actually, I saw that you do these amazing events at dusk, so people can visit Jupiter Artland at nighttime and see the sunset. And I really liked this idea of time passing and also the longevity of nature. So if you think how old trees are, you know, they'll outlive all of us. And I like this idea of the kind of length of the permanence of the artworks and the kind of care you take to look after these artworks.
That is the quality you get here, is this sense of timelessness. And with Tricia Brown's live performance, what's beautiful about that work is, you know, it has no set, it has no, you know, theatrical production. So when we were doing our site visit, it involved us walking around trying to find the right size tree, the right girth tree. So we were literally kind of putting
cuddling
our arms
trees.
Around trees.
Oh, I love that.
I like doing that. Hug a tree. That's
hug
great.
A tree, yeah.
That's
yeah.
good.
But it's this is our first, this is our most ambitious move into live art. And it's really been enabled by the Art Festival and by the International Festival. You know, we've always...
Do they fund it, or do you have a lot of patrons and benefactors here that are supporting all this?
It's our patrons are our founders.
Wow.
And they've it very much driven by philanthropy and with wanting to share the works with the widest possible audience. So we're open to the public for the summer months because we're in Scotland and the weather, but our learning program goes right the way through the year.
Yeah, because there was kids when we came in all doing classes and workshops, and that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And with the pool, it's given us this opportunity to work with a whole lot of different community groups that might otherwise not come here. Because it's, I think sometimes more formal galleries can be quite intimidating, but if you invite people to come jump in a pool, it's...
I also just love this whole Jupiter Artland, because it's so soulful here as well, and it's so peaceful, but it's a way of seeing sculpture and artworks just in a completely new way. Yeah. And it's really coherent as well, and kind of rigorous. It's not like someone just plonking a sculpture in the middle of a field. Yeah. It's literally really thought out. Yeah. And the way you can approach a sculpture, the walk, the journey you can make, and you have this amazing map. And actually, there's going to be a map that Bombay Sapphire are doing as well, which is going to highlight all the people we're talking about today. So they'll have Jupiter Artland on that. But when you actually come here, there's also a map, isn't there, that you can like follow the map, and you can kind of, everyone's experience of the park is unique to them, because the route you take is your choice. And I love the way that you can, it kind of unravels in a completely different way. So I've only been here twice before. This is my third time. But I feel each time I'm coming here, I'm doing it in a different way. And even if you see the same sculptures, the weather's different, or, you know, so I love that uniqueness of the visit.
Yeah. One of my favorite architectural quotes is a garden path is like a philosophical preparation. And that's something that we very much embed in the work, that it's the journey to the work and the encounter with the work is where the artwork happens. But that said, it's not all peace and tranquility here. At the end of Edinburgh Art Festival, for the closing weekend, we're hosting our first kind of two-night cross art form festival. So it's going to be music, live performance, sound art, installations, film, moving image, and that will be running like right the way through the night. So it'll be a slightly more kind of festival type vibe.
That's great. So exciting.
Have you still got Pay What You Can Tuesday?
Yeah. Very good. So Pay What You Can Tuesday, and again, it's just to make it as open to everyone as possible.
So every guest that comes on Talk Art, we ask them two questions. The first is, if you could do an art heist and take home any artwork that you wanted, and it could be anything, it doesn't have to be a small thing that you can put in your pocket, it could be a giant sculpture or anything, what would you take home? And we thought maybe it would be fun if you could select for your art heist something from Jupiter Artland, or at least Edinburgh.
Can I have two?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So the first would be Tricia Brown, a film called Water Motor. It's an absolutely exquisite film. It's just her in her studio.
Are you showing that here?
We're screening it because it needs to be screened in special conditions, right. But it is in the exhibition and will be performed. So that I would definitely take. And the other, could I have Phyllida de Barlow's Quarry in my living room?
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be awesome.
And a new house that would be big enough to take it.
With the foundations as well that she was worried about. Fantastic. Yeah.
Love that.
Our next question we ask everyone is, what is your favourite colour?
Blue.
Why?
It used to be green, and now I think I just have a closer relationship with the sky. Don't know. Don't know
that's
why.
Nice.
Why?
Yeah. That's very
blue.
Nice.
Okay. Just because you're constantly curating art under the sky.
Yeah.
That is your new. That's your new gallery.
Yeah.
It is the skies of Edinburgh.
How big is Jupiter Artland?
100 acres.
100. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Love
I also had such a great experience here the first time I came. I went into the forest kind of part of it, and you go down. It's like almost like a forest walk, and I just remember you sort of discover artworks, you know, along the trail, and it was just so exciting. I love that forest bit.
I think everyone should come here.
Please come here.
Yes.
And so we've come here with Bombay Sapphire. They've helped us do this trip. And they currently have a campaign about stirring creativity. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you, what stirs your creativity?
The unexpected. After years working inside galleries, stepping outside, working when your companion is nature, there is never a dull moment. So what stirs my creativity is the unexpected.
Well, that's a really
that's
great answer.
That's a brilliant answer.
Love that.
Thank you, Claire Feely.
Yeah, thank you, Claire.
Thank you so much
well,
for being
Well, thank you, guys.
Our guest.
I hope you can come every year, and you have
come
to
every day.
We're going to come every day, every
Tuesday, and pay.
I love Edinburgh so much. Claire Feely, thank you so much. So let's go and walk around now. We're going to explore and see the sights of Jupiter Artland.
Thank you.
So now we have made the journey from Jupiter Artland all the way to New Haven, which is a former industrial area in the north of the city in Edinburgh. And we are very excited because we have come to the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop.
We have.
And it's both of our first time here.
Yeah.
And Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop has an amazing exhibition space, and they do a lot of artist projects here. Mm-hmm. But they also have an open access studio and workshops where you can actually come and make art and be creative. And even it kind of reminded me a bit of being at school when you had all the what do you call that? Like
tech.
Tech,
something
yeah,
tech.
Like tech
what was it
class or something. We just had an amazing tour around these studios, and they were just filled with people making incredible like metal work and carpentry and all of these things, and then loads of artworks.
Yeah, and there's an amazing courtyard outside that's open, and there's people out there that are using the courtyard to create sculptures. Someone was there with a chisel, like chiseling out some figure of David out of a piece of alabaster. That looked very exciting. It's an amazing, vibrant place, and we're very excited to be here as part of the Edinburgh Arts Festival.
And we are proud to announce that we are meeting the director and program coordinator of Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop, Laura Simpson
and Leslie Young.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
Good. You've just given us an amazing tour of this venue. That was an exciting thing to do. Do you have a lot of tourists to this place?
I think we've got a mixture of people that use us every day, are part of our communities here, artists, other people that join in courses and then use our facilities, members of the community from around here that come to special partnership programs that we run, like the schools and other community groups, and then also people that come to visit the exhibitions, and they are sometimes tourists that are visiting the city, and then other people who are looking for cultural things to do, walking down the cycle path or making a special visit here.
So what's down the cycle path? Why is that a walk?
Well, we've got this fantastic network of paths in Edinburgh which join up all different parts of the city. And the one that's right next to us is called the Hawthorne Vale Path, which is part of our address as well. We have commissioned an artist to make a work for that path so that we can contribute to the placemaking for this area. That's Clove Hitch made by Lucy Wayman.
All right. Oh, great.
And a lot of people come down the path and enter into the courtyard where Carolina Chantre's work is on show, and they go past Adam Benmacoof's work in the tower. So we really wanted to connect that way as well.
So you've got these are three artists that you currently have up showing here.
Yeah, right. We've commissioned three artists for Edinburgh Art Festival this year.
Wow. And did they make their work in the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop?
Yeah, all of the artists made their work here. The relationships built up with each of the three of them in different ways, but they've all used us as a resource in different ways to make the artwork.
That's incredible.
I've been a really big fan of Caroline's in particular for a long, long time. I've been following her career for maybe, I don't know, about 15 years or so. And it's been such a joy to see her grow and grow. But today, when we arrived here, I could not believe the scale of her work in your courtyard. And I heard that you've recently started to use the courtyard as a place for exhibiting art to try and almost increase the areas to have art included and for people to have, you know, even more enjoyable experience of seeing sculpture and also sound art.
Yeah, Caroline was invited to make a presentation kind of using the courtyard, which was unusual for her because she doesn't normally make work that kind of is presented outside. And it's also quite a sizable space. So she needed to kind of rethink kind of some of the kind of materials that she would habitually use, which could often be kind of wool or clay. But the work that's in the courtyard is made of raffia, so it kind of has a tolerance kind of for the elements. Mm-hmm. And it's a great kind of, it's a work on a size that's kind of really, I think, even surprising to Caroline. You know, she was kind of really she was definitely challenged by the invitation that we made to her, but she's absolutely kind of, you know, risen, she's kind of risen to it without a doubt.
It's so brilliant that you're able to facilitate that, you know, like to create something new. So you're challenging the artist, they're learning and evolving in their practice. But also I think the colours in the raffia are so vibrant. Yeah. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. It's really alive.
Yeah.
And today it's actually a really hot day here in Edinburgh, but it did have a few scattered showers. But it even in this kind of duller light somehow, it pops, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely resonates, yeah. And also there's a kind of brilliant kind of sound that when the wind kind of blows through it, the raffia kind of really kind of picks up the kind of the noise of the kind of wind kind of like traveling through it. So it's a work that has real presence kind of in the courtyard.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Arts, the arts podcast. And we're here today with Budweiser beer. And we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a 4-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and is really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a 4-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and Talk Art with Sir Peter Blake.
I must say that having visited today, because it's our first time being here, I'm really struck by how alive the space is, because there was actually a sculptor making a work in the courtyard, like in the edge of the courtyard, and you can like stand there and watch him make it. And it was just really exciting to be that
formative, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be involved in that side
exactly.
of the art that's being made.
And to see it being created in front of you. And it was the sculpture he was making. It was quite a dramatic performance almost. It was brilliant. So I really think people, if you do come down here, and you also do tours, don't you, where you take people around?
That's right. Over the Edinburgh Art Festival, we are doing tours on Fridays and Saturdays at 2 p.m.
And that's a chance to hear from one of us members of staff about the artist's work as you're looking around, and also have the chance to come in and look at the workshops. But we also have loads of other ways to come and visit. People can book in for a tour, and we're part of Doors Open at other points for people to see the workshops.
Brilliant. Amazing. So we've come down here with Bombay Sapphire, and they asked us about their new campaign, which we liked the idea of. It's called Stir Creativity. And it was something that Russell and I felt really we identify with, because that's kind of what our lives are, is like thinking about how to be creative and also
stirring things up.
And all stirring things up, but also to just be surrounded by creative people. So I wanted to ask you guys, what stirs your creativity?
Well, to be honest, I'm quite new here. I've just been here since October last year. And I think that this being at this place has been able to stir my creativity. I think one of the really amazing things about Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop is it's a community of practice. That's a phrase that we use quite a lot when we're trying to describe what happens here. I don't know if it comes, if it sparks a set of ideas in you, but the idea here is that you're working alongside other people, like you described, coming into that live working space of somebody in the courtyard, or seeing those people with sparks flying, or like musing over what they're going to be cutting in the wood workshop, for example. But it's a place where you can share skills with other people. Mm-hmm. And we've got amazing technicians as well that can really help you move on with your projects. But it's got a community, and there's a sort of communal element to it. So I found that really inspiring.
That's wonderful. Mm. So we have a lot of young artists listening to our show. We've been getting messages from lots of young artists, and they often send in pictures and all kinds of things. It's amazing, all age groups as well. And also designers and fashion designers and all kinds of creative people. And I wanted to ask you guys, we think that everyone has creative potential within them. And sometimes it can be difficult to sort of know how to start. So what kind of tips would you give someone looking to awaken their own creative potential?
Oh, I definitely know what was useful for me, which was find a community of practice and start things yourself, because you need the support structure, but also you can be generous and you can actually make opportunities for other people and yourself. Sometimes it's reciprocated, but you learn along the way. That's my two top tips.
Oh, I love that.
And I would say, don't be put off by those thresholds that you think kind of exist, kind of, you know, in front of galleries or museums. You know, step over them and kind of, and you know, take your place kind of in amongst those kind of institutions and organizations. They absolutely they need you and they want you, and you'll find lots of kind of really kind of extraordinary things kind of that artists have made kind of today or kind of sometime in the past. And yeah, just it's all there for you kind of.
And I think it is all about a conversation and opening up that conversation. And without two people to have that conversation, the conversation can't happen. So we need visitors to all these museums and spaces and everywhere across Edinburgh, obviously, because we love Edinburgh.
We love it.
But I wanted to say as well, with your cafe, I was really impressed because the things you sell in there are so delicious, and we had the best ever scones.
It was a cinnamon scone, Rob.
If you feel like you don't know...
With butter and jam.
It was incredible. And I feel like if you don't know about art yet, your entry point could be, go to the cafe, at the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop, get a scone, get that butter, and then it'll all unravel around you. That's the best thing. You will start to learn about art.
Good tip, Rob. Good tip.
Thank you. So before we say thank you very much and goodbye for now, I would like to say we ask every guest who comes on the show two questions. One is, what's your favourite colour?
Green.
And why?
Because I've got red hair.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. I mean, it's not real red hair.
How long have you had red hair?
Probably too long.
Do you pair it with green clothing normally? You're wearing black today.
Yeah, I have. But yeah, often green.
Very nice. Good, that makes sense.
And your favourite colour?
Maybe blue.
You're wearing blue today as well?
I have. Aren't I? I think it's the sky, blue sky, blue sea. I like that sort of thing.
I feel like here in Edinburgh you have really big sky as well. I'm sort of really aware of the sky today.
There's just amazing views in Edinburgh, just as you go about. Yeah, it's great. And we're really close to the docks and the sea at New Haven.
Cool.
And then our second question we ask is, if you had a touchstone artwork, and you could do an art heist and steal the artwork and get away with it, what would it be? And as we're Edinburgh based, if there's anything in Edinburgh that you could take home and live with forever, what would that be?
I saw some Bridget Riley's at the exhibition that's at
the National Gallery
at the moment. And some of the sketches, the maquettes in there, nice. Rather than the finished works, were really good because you can see where... I suppose it's my interest in the artist's process.
Yeah.
You can see where she's made adjustments in it. But there's also some really amazing paintings by Robert McBride in the collection, National Collection, which are like really, really disturbing figurative paintings that are made just post-war. And I think that I wouldn't want that in my house because it's too disturbing, but they're pretty amazing for an art heist.
What's awesome. Disturbing in them? I don't know the word that
just works. the bodies are contorted and the color palette is really sickly and dark, and it just talks about a real devastation, a personal devastation, and that mirrors a sort of societal devastation.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not very cheery.
Get the Bridget Riley drawings. You can live with those ones, yes.
Yeah.
I also love Bridget Riley's printmaking. I think she's one of the best printmakers ever.
Yeah.
They're just beautiful. I think they're incredible.
What would you take?
Well, I've been racking my brains, and I haven't come up with the perfect contemporary art.
That's what we should be aiming for.
Work to kind of to acquire. So I'm going to go traditional. I'm going to say something from the National Galleries of Scotland. So probably... maybe kind of Poussin's Seven Sacraments.
Wow, cool.
Just a basic piece.
Just a basic one.
Well, you might just as well kind of, Poussin, So, yes, I think something from the National Gallery kind of on the mound would fit quite nicely kind of in my life.
Love that.
Great, we'll help you do that.
Thank you so much, both of you, for showing us around today. We have loved visiting, and we'll be back for sure. And I really recommend everyone to try and come on those Saturday or Friday tours, because it's just a really great experience, and I think you'll get a lot from it.
Yes.
Yeah, or you could come on Saturdays and make work. So Adam Benmacoof's actually running two sound workshops for the next two Saturdays, so you can make it... sound poems with Adam Benmacoof, and Lucy Wayman's doing workshops as well.
Awesome. And we're actually about to go and find Adam and have a chat with him as well.
Yes,
and
we've
get
no idea where he is.
Perspective of what it's like to work at the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop as an artist and educator as well.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Cheers.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. We have now made our way through the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop, and we have found a great artist and educator who has been based here for the last few years, and he's going to discuss his work with us. And he actually, luckily, has an incredible exhibition at the moment here in the tower in the courtyard. And it was art that was generated out of his time spent here at the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop. So we would like to welcome... Adam Benmacloof.
Hello there. Thank you very much for having me.
That's all right, Adam. Adam, tell us about your name.
So my name is... It sounds very Scottish, actually.
It does.
When you say it, and I think that's because...
Especially when you say it with your Scottish accent.
Yeah, Benmacloof. Yeah. And it's even got that loch.
Yes.
So that's how you say
Benmacloof. Lucky thing. Yes.
But it's Algerian. It's an Algerian name. It means son of Cliff.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I love it. So we've just seen your show in the Beacon Tower here. Yes. And we were just talking about that with Leslie and Laura.
Fabulous.
And you took us in there about half an hour ago, and it's stunning. And it's a triangular tower, and you go in and you're in this confined space, and there's speakers in there, and you have this recording of these five-year-olds singing. And it's incredibly moving and really... And there's a wind that comes in, and it was really gusty there. And you said that that's like a natural... element that's come into the tower. It's really immersive and theatrical and touching. What was it like to be commissioned to use that space?
It was a real... I think a lot of ways it was a challenge. I think as an artist, I'm probably drawn to more touchy-feely art. So the idea of showing in a concrete tower was a real striking idea.
Mm.
And I think... that was good, because it was almost like a provocation, and it was this idea of how can I change this space? How can I fill it with something that that isn't there yet. So yeah, and also yeah, put in big purple and pink cushions to lean on while you're in there.
Lovely.
And also just this idea of it's so sparse, it can feel very like brutal.
It's like brutalist architecture, I suppose,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also like it's very gorgeous in its own way.
Yeah.
And I think when you go in there you really do have a real immersive experience. So it's that combination of feeling quite maybe a brutal and empty, but then also surrounded by it. So I think I picked up on that idea of, or that experience of being immersed. So a lot of the noise when it comes at you, yeah, like you say, it's these choirs, it's these orchestras, and you're really just hopefully just like you're filled with the sound and it's going on around you, and you start to maybe get the sense of being in amongst a big choir practicing Mamma Mia.
I think I found...
Is that what it is?
Mamma Mia? Yeah, I think we just walked into it. It was playing.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Mamma Mia.
I think when I first entered the space, I was really aware that architecturally it felt quite still in there. And you can imagine if the sound wasn't there, it would be incredibly, almost claustrophobic or a bit intense and very still and quiet. Yeah. But with your sound, especially because they're field recordings that are almost kind of like people rehearsing or practicing, so there's this element of, it's not kind of perfected...
Explain what field recording is in.
It's a recording where you take a microphone, it's actually what we're doing right now, where you take microphones out to a location and then you can set up the mic and just record. And it's kind of an informal way of recording. Mm-hmm. And I think often the results you get from that kind of field recording can be much more honest and relaxed and truthful because people don't feel so like they're being put upon, like suddenly there's a camera in front of their face. Or, you know what I mean? It's quite a relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I think with the success of that work for me was this idea of the... if you think of you're going and watching a classical piece of music and it's all perfect and you hear the whole thing from start to finish and it's like a work. I like this idea of almost experimenting and kind of practicing and it's not the finished part, work yet. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like the work in progress. And I think that was really a beautiful element to it.
Thank you. I think this idea of field recording, again, that's interesting because one of the things that I was interested in was there's a whole genre of experimental music, and it's called music concrete or concrete music.
Right.
And concrete music is exactly that, where you would go outside, you'd record that street that we can see from the window, to record cars going past, and then you would make a sound work out of that. So it would be really trying to record this idea of life. But usually it's, again, like that kind of brutal... atmosphere is usually quite disturbing. It's noises of engines and it can be quite full on. So I thought, why don't I do these field recordings and record something that's equally recording life, but just recording people's voices and music, and not studio music, but the noises of rehearsals and the noises of practicing. So it's that idea of catching someone unaware, but still getting this kind of performative element. So that mix of candid and performative.
And it's kind of community based, isn't it, because you're recording people of a community kind of coming together to sing, and that's such a beautiful sound.
And you were talking about the education center here, so you've been working here for 2 years in an education role.
It's a dream job. It's basically every year the Edinburgh Sculptural Workshop brings in every primary five in the area. So that's in Scottish speak, that's between 8 and 9. So it's a really good point to just bring kids in and just let them go with materials. And they've got this combination of just being just really like open and like free and just unself-conscious. And the work they make is amazing. We do an exhibition of it every year.
Wow.
It's pioneered by Debbie Banerjee. It's based off of the most radical teaching methods, like Black Mountain College. So all those methodologies Debbie brought right into this program and just applies it in this beautiful way to just the local 8 and 9 year olds and just brings them in. And every kid gets it as soon as they hit Premier 5. It's been going for 8 years now. So there's all these teenagers going by that are like waving at us through the window who did it, seven years ago.
The Black Mountain School was founded by Joseph Albers and Annie Albers, and it's where they taught. Was it Black Mountain School before it got closed by the Nazis and then it went somewhere else? What was it called before that?
The Black Mountain College was a lot of the artists that had been really run out of Germany by the Nazis that then had refuge in America, and they brought these...
Oh, they had Bauhaus. That's what it was. Yeah. So they had the Bauhaus that closed down, then they opened up the Black Mountain School. Yes. Incredible. So they've got them elements here.
Yeah, and it really feels like, and the last year the theme was Bauhaus, and they made all this work that was inspired by the way that Bauhaus artists made theirs.
So cool.
So do you work predominantly in sound, do you think?
So I think... Predominantly, I would say I would work in print and painting and film.
Because you studied painting, didn't you?
I studied painting in Glasgow School of Art. And really, that's a big kind of, it's a big inspiration for me in the way I think about things. But yeah, this work, it was interesting because the work itself that I've made for Edinburgh Festival, The Noise of Making Spills Over, is about a learning process. And it was that for me. I really had to kind of draw on, you know, like teenage forays into garage band and recording like an acoustic guitar, and all came into play. And it's like, oh, I can actually use all those skills to make an artwork. So throughout the piece, there's actually a conversation with my boyfriend, and he's trying to give me some advice about how to make this work using
the software. Is your boyfriend an artist?
He's an actor and a performer.
Is he?
Yeah.
He sounds great. Sounds like a very good boyfriend to
have. Yeah, he's a great boyfriend. Good.
And another string to your bow is that you've been the arts editor for The Skinny, which is a really great publication here.
Yeah.
And talk a bit about what you do for them.
So, for 6 years, it's been a kind of consistent, but as a small part of what I've been doing with my life. So every month I basically put together the art content for this wider magazine that covers theatre and books and latterly television and all these, I think there's a sexuality section as well, and I do the art part. And it's just coordinating writers to write reviews and interviews, and when I can't get writers to do it, I do them myself, so I do quite a lot of writing.
Is it an online thing or is it an actual printed?
It's an actual print mag. So you'll definitely, if you're going around, you'll catch a copy somewhere. They'll be in different venues. There'll be one.
Have you made money from it? As
It's a small amount of money.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good. So not in debt with it.
No. Okay. We get our recompense.
So if anybody does come to visit Edinburgh, do you get The Skinny, because it's a really great guide as well. I think it will sort of give you an idea of what's going on in town.
And it's just written by people that are involved in the scene.
It's a passion project.
Yeah, it's a grassroots effort. It really is.
That's really cool.
That. So you run these sound making workshops as well as the workshops for the kids.
Yeah.
So I've also read somewhere that you run tarot workshops. Is that right?
Russ was on the plane today.
I mean, he was so excited
about the tarot.
I love a clairvoyant. I love a tarot. Yeah. I love a witch at the end of the pier. I love it. That's what I call Rob.
I mean, I definitely think of myself as a witch.
Tell us about your tarot workshops.
Well, it really ties into everything we've been talking about. Basically, with the tarot making workshops, I will give out inks and drawing materials and coloured paper and glue sticks, all the best craft materials. And there's usually about 12 people, and we'll all do a single card draw. So you're getting a reading, and what the person does is they'll describe the card without showing it to the room, and everyone has to make a version of that card. So you can't name it. So you end up getting this whole new deck by the end of it as well. And it's just this way of making sure that tarot doesn't become this kind of
mystical,
you know, frozen
kind of heritage thing.
Only some people have this secret knowledge. It's just that if you say it out loud, everyone draws it, you suddenly know what's happening, you know what it means.
So you can do people's tarot though yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I'm pretty good at it. I don't know if I'd match up with all the book definitions, but I can give a reading.
Absolutely love that. Yeah. I want to read in one day.
Definitely. Anytime.
Amazing.
Yeah. So a question that we're asking our guests today is, what stirs your creativity?
Well, it has to be, just grassroots activism, informal education, friendship, chatting, and just that's where I got my best ideas, as well as going to see shows and reading. But really, I process things out loud with my friends in Glasgow.
What's the activism then, the grassroots activism you're involved in now at the moment? What is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think in Glasgow there's a real beautiful movement to helping asylum seekers and LGBTQ unity, and that is a real specific organisation. And what they do is they give almost, you know, some legal advocacy and also material support to people that have come to Glasgow to seek asylum.
Wow.
And it's a really, you know, it's a difficult,
that's brilliant,
you know, it's the hostile environment that people face, and there's a lot of things going on like that in Glasgow. But the main thing I've been involved in is a gallery called Transmission Gallery, and that's an artist
run space. Transmission
So I was on the committee for the last 2 years.
Cool. I used to work with Michael Fullerton, and did a really incredible seminal show at Transmission.
So that'll be in the archive, so we've got an archive. And really great thing about Transmission just now is it's all run by people of colour, and it's really begun, a show at the start of the year just connected up with these places like LGBT Unity and also Ubuntu Women's Shelter, the Person of Colour Society, Glasgow School of Art, and the Royal Conservatoire, which is the performance school, which you'll probably know. And it's really kind of worked a way to make it just a real vital part of the culture of the city, but also, yeah, all the grassroots activism and supporting that as well.
And for everyone listening, Transmission, if you'd like to visit that incredible space, it's in Glasgow, which is also where Adam lives. Yeah. So even though we're currently in Edinburgh, it's definitely worth going to Glasgow. And I was obsessed with Glasgow when I was growing up. Yeah. I used to do so many gigs there in my band and had such great audiences. It was like some of the best audiences I ever had.
Oh, yeah.
It's like people love music there as well. So it's a great city. And then we have a lot of younger listeners and also just artists who are all levels of their career. And we wanted to find out, because we think everyone has creative potential within them. And what would you say as a kind of advice or tip for people who are looking to kind of be creative or awaken their creativity?
I would say it's a long game, and don't beat yourself up. Just really celebrate your wins, forgive your losses, and just learn, and also just learn your craft and be patient with it, and just make sure when you make a work, it's absolutely the best work you can make at that point in your life.
Good advice.
Amazing.
Loving that.
Beautiful. So we also ask all our guests two more questions. Okay. They're very tough. The first one is, if you had a touchstone artwork, an artwork that you could have an art heist on and steal and keep for yourself, what would that be? And if possible, can we make it Edinburgh-centric?
Okay.
Or maybe Glasgow as well for you.
Okay.
Scottish-centric.
Scottish-centric. I think, there's a lot of good things going on with the festival just now.
Yeah.
One of which would be the Grace and Perry show.
Oh, wow. Where's that on?
That is on, I think that, is that Dovecot Galleries?
Oh, cool. Great.
Is that right? Oh, mate, we're getting that wrong.
Because we're going to try and check out the Bridget Riley while we're here. And then I guess we're trying to do
Grayson. We'll do Grayson. We love Grayson as well. Yeah, cool.
Definitely steal the Grayson. I think it's a tapestry as well this time. Oh, wow. Have a tapestry in your house.
Yeah, beautiful.
And just, and the details on it. And just, yeah, the way that Grayson Perry just includes so much in one work, and it's disturbing, and it's relatable, and it's familiar.
You'll never know it all. You're passing, you'll be like, I didn't notice that before, and you see suddenly a word or a look on someone's face or something, or a building. You're like, oh, I've completely ignored that. Yeah. It's been peripheral to me the whole time.
Yeah,
yeah, that's great.
He's good such a powerful storyteller as well, and especially visual storytelling. Yeah. It's just a really great kind of history as well that he sort of responds to and continues and creates new histories. That's a really cool thing. Yeah. And the final question is, what is your favourite colour?
I guess it would be, my favourite colour would be turmeric orange.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
That's very specific. Loving
turmeric
that.
Turmeric orange.
So spicy.
Yeah, yeah, you know the way when it gets in your fingers especially the real stuff. Like, I use the powder all the time, but when you get the root and that just like stains your wooden spoon, and it's just gorgeous.
That's amazing.
And you know, it's an anti-inflammatory, has so many health benefits.
Really?
Turmeric, yeah.
Good to know.
As a colour, it's just so vibrant. It's just hot.
That's weirdly like struck off a whole thing in my head right now. I'm thinking about Howard Hodgkin, because Howard Hodgkin used to love going to India because he was so obsessed with all the colours there. And through the colours of spices and food and like fabrics and dyeing clothes and all the kind of sensory overload that he experienced when he went there. And for some reason that all just came into my head. I was like remembering Howard Hodgkin, the late Howard Hodgkin, who was an incredible painter.
I thought you were going to say like Shades of Green because you've got a neon neon lime sock and you've got like a spearmint green sock.
And I'm loving your trousers. They are the best trousers ever, these stripy trousers. You'll see them in the photos, everybody. They are incredible.
Yeah. Well, they're Cancer Research Originals. They were £4.
Oh, wow.
Loving
Do you always
that.
Keep the labels from all your clothes you buy in your pocket?
Yeah.
Oh, you bought them yesterday. They're a triumph.
So well, they're special.
That's another part of your creativity, though, clearly. You like to express yourself through the way you dress.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Loving that.
Yeah, yeah.
Big fan and advocate for that.
Yes. Yeah. That's a bit of Rob right there.
Yeah.
I read this beautiful part of, have you ever read Brick Lane?
No,
by
I haven't.
Monica Lee.
No.
And then the protagonist in it just develops throughout the book, and she begins to be, you know, a woman that's in an arranged marriage, and then she gradually finds her voice and her agency. And at one point, she's wearing this beautiful red and gold sari, and then she says to herself, she realizes that it wasn't fate that was deciding her life, it was the clothes she was wearing.
Wow, interesting.
So after you read that, then you started to dress to impress, dress like to express.
I started to appreciate the power of dress.
Wow.
That's interesting. Well, thank you for that recommendation for the book as well. I am going to go back home and I'm going to read that book. Good one. Well, Adam, it has been such a privilege to
thank
meet you.
So much,
and congratulations
you so
on
much,
your work here. It was really, really stunning.
Everybody must get down to the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop and see this.
Oh, thank you so
and
much.
And we are now going to head over to another place in Edinburgh, and we'll be revealing all very soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to a very special episode of Talk Art with Robert Diament and Russell Tovey. We've loved celebrating Edinburgh's creative scene, all thanks to Bombay Sapphire's new campaign, Discover the Possibilities Within, with thanks to the teams at The Skinny and Acast for helping guide us around the city. Please visit our Instagram at TalkArt for images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Plus, you can download a special map of our Edinburgh highlights from the at Bombay Sapphire UK Instagram, edited by Anthony Shaw and recorded live in Edinburgh. We'll be back soon.